In Proverbs 17, verse 28, the writer tells us that even a fool is counted wise when he holds his tongue. When he shuts his mouth, he is considered perceptive. In Psalm 39, verse 1, the psalmist said, I will watch my ways and keep my tongue from sin. I will put a muzzle on my mouth. In James chapter 1, verse 26, James talks about the need for bridling one's tongue. And yes, I realize that about 6 weeks ago, I did a sermon called Word Power. One might think, why are you preaching another lesson on the use of the tongue? Well, two reasons. This is a very different lesson than the one I preached 6 weeks ago. And the second reason is that if you've completely conquered all your problems regarding the things you say since that last sermon, well, good for you. But it might not hurt the rest of us to explore this topic a little further. In the third chapter of the book of James, James tells us in verse 8, chapter 3 and verse 8, that no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Just when we think we've conquered our tongues have a way of letting us know how mistaken we are. The words we write, the words we speak to others, can leave a huge impact and create a lasting memory, either good or bad. So it's important to choose our words carefully. Words, our choice of words, and the way we express ourselves can make a relationship, they can break a relationship. Someone has said one kind word can change someone's entire day. Same can be said for careless words or hurtful words, words spoken in anger. In fact, people can destroy years of accomplishments with a few careless words. Remember the song of the women in 1 Samuel chapter 18? They sang, Saul has killed his thousands, but David his 10,000s. Those 10 little words, and Saul's life was never the same. Once spoken, our words may be forgiven, but they might not be forgotten. A failure to choose our words carefully can lead to many irreconcilable problems in life. For example, we can do tremendous damage regarding the example we set for Christ. James tells us in chapter 1, verse 26, if anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless or vain or without any force. A failure to choose our words carefully, a failure to put a muzzle on our mouth, can be a source of great trouble. The proverb writer tells us this in Proverbs 21, verse 23. Whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from troubles. That says it in the positive way. To not guard your mouth and tongue will bring great troubles is the obvious meaning. Who has not gotten himself into trouble with his tongue? Who has not created problems by sticking his foot in his mouth? Who has not made difficulties for himself by choosing his words poorly? Who has not been troubled by others who didn't choose their words carefully? There's a poem which is not completely about the tongue, but it certainly includes the tongue. It's a poem with which you're probably familiar. It's called Children Learn What They Live. It was written by Dorothy Law Nolte. It's a well-known poem. If children live with criticism, they learn to condemn. If children live with hostility, they learn to fight. If children live with ridicule, they learn to be insecure. If children live with shame, they learn to feel guilty. If children live with tolerance, they learn to be patient. If children live with encouragement, they learn confidence. Children live with praise, they learn to appreciate. If children live with fairness, they learn justice. If children live with security, they learn to have faith. If they live with approval, they learn to like themselves. If children live with discipline, they learn to have respect for authority. If children live with acceptance and friendship, they learn to find love in the world. We need to choose our words carefully with our children. We need to learn to choose our words carefully with everyone. Our words have tremendous power for both good and for evil. Some people choose their words carefully. It's just the way they're cut out. They seem to weigh every word on their tongue before they speak them. Others are rash in what they say. They tend to be quick with their words. They tend to be hasty with their speech. Proverbs chapter 29, verse 20 says, "Do you see a man hasty in his words? There is more hope for a fool than for him." Now, this is not criticizing people who talk fast. It's not necessarily criticizing people who have a quick response. It's a condemnation for those who speak without thinking. They speak without considering the ramifications or the consequences of their words. Proverb writer is condemning someone for whom this behavior is typical. This is the way they respond. This is their comportment. This is the way they typically behave. A talkative woman was once conversing with the well-known preacher Billy Sunday. This would have been in the early 1900s. The lady was trying to justify the quickness of her tongue by saying, "Well, it passes. It's over with quickly." Billy Sunday said, "So is a shotgun blast." It's been said that we need to engage our brain before we open our mouths. The people described here don't do that. Proverbs 29, verse 11 says, "A fool vents all his feelings, but a wise man holds them back." There are people we can vent to. There are people we can talk openly to. There are people we can trust. This is not condemning opening up and confiding in those in whom we have confidence. This is talking about someone who just blurts out everything that comes to his mind to everybody within earshot. Romans 15, verse 14 says, this is Paul speaking, and he says, "Now I myself am confident concerning you, my brethren, that you are also full of goodness, filled with all knowledge, able also to admonish one another." New International Version says, "You're filled with knowledge and competent to instruct or to counsel one another." I submit to you that you cannot admonish, instruct, and counsel one another unless there's open and transparent communication. That's not what the proverb writer is criticizing. Someone said to be able to speak several languages can be an invaluable asset, but the ability to keep your mouth shut in any language is priceless. Some people simply don't know how to stop talking. They just go on and on and on. Voltaire once said, "The secret of being boring is to say everything." Lying is defined as a false statement or action, especially one made with the intent to deceive. Lying has always been wrong. One of the Ten Commandments condemned lying. Exodus chapter 20, verse 16 says, "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor." The CEV, the Contemporary English Version, says it in more, well, contemporary language when it translates this passage quite simply, "Do not tell lies about others." Colossians 3, verse 9 says, "Do not lie to one another." Revelation chapter 21, verse 8 says, "The cowardly, the unbelieving, the sexually immoral, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone." There are different ways of lying. We talk about suppressing the truth. We talk about mental reservations. We talk about white lies. But all these are merely ways that we lie to ourselves to convince ourselves that we're not lying. Gossip is defined as indulging in idle talk and rumors about others. Reading again from the Contemporary English Version, Proverbs 26, verse 20 says, "Where there is no fuel, a fire goes out. Where there is no gossip, arguments come to an end." Proverbs 16:28 also says, gossip is no good. It causes hard feelings and comes between friends. Someone once said, I like parrots. A parrot is the only creature gifted with the power of speech that's content to repeat just what it hears without trying to make a good story out of it. Gossip causes arguments. Gossip promotes strife. Gossip separates friends. It destroys relationships. And contrary to popular opinion, gossip is not dignified just because it's the truth. And if we listen to gossip, let us not think that we're any better than the ones spreading the gossip. There are things that need to be talked about. There are things that need to be understood. But if we're talking about others just for the sake of doing it, for the cheap thrill of it, that's gossip. And remember this, if someone will gossip to you, you can be certain they will also gossip about you. In the little Dr. Seuss movie, Horton Hears a Who, Horton, the little elephant, is going to tell a few of his animal friends a secret. At first, he tells them they cannot tell this secret to anybody else. They all look at each other and they promise that they wouldn't tell the secret to anybody else, but they hastily added, but if we do, we'll make them promise not to tell anyone else. Horton happily agrees. The Bible also condemns speaking evil of others or slander. Gossip and slander both damage the reputation of another, but gossip is more about making oneself feel important or in the know. One dictionary defines gossip as rumor or talk of a personal or sensational nature. Slander, however, has a more malicious nature. Slander is defined as defamatory statements injurious to the reputation or well-being of a person, a malicious statement. Will Durant once said, to speak evil of others, to slander others, is a dishonest way of praising ourselves. The first portion of James chapter 4, verse 11 says, brothers and sisters, do not slander one another. In 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 1, the apostle tells Christians to rid yourselves of all malice and all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander of every kind. Paul says in Ephesians 4:31, get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling, and slander, along with every form of malice. Slander often has a way of backfiring on us. As one lady was looking out her kitchen windows while on the phone with someone, she criticized her neighbor for hanging dirty clothes out on the clothesline. Later, she went out inside and discovered that the dirty streaks were not on her neighbor's clothes. They were on her own kitchen windows. Slander has a way of backfiring on us. Some people can't say five words without cursing or referencing something filthy. In Ephesians 4:29, Paul says, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. One translation renders chapter 5 and verse 4 of Ephesians, there must be no evil talk among you. You must not speak foolishly or tell evil jokes. Then there are the complainers. We know what a complainer is, but one definition is giving audible expression to unwarranted dissatisfaction. Of course, we all have a defense for such an allegation as that. We're only giving audible expression to warranted dissatisfaction, so we're not complainers. We have a right to complain. We read about the Israelites wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. And on various occasions, they are said to have complained. They were condemned for complaining. God punished them for complaining. Think about it. They complained about what they had to eat. They complained about what they didn't have to eat. They complained about not having anything to drink. They complained about their leadership. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 10, Paul says, don't complain as some of the Israelites complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. God said that their dissatisfaction was unwarranted. So when is our dissatisfaction more legitimate than theirs? I don't know about you, but the thought of wandering around in the wilderness day after day, month after... Steve might like that, but that's not up my alley. Stories told of a monk who entered a monastery. I'm pretty sure you've heard this before. I think I told this a couple of years ago. The day he entered, he took a vow of silence. He vowed that he would speak only two words every 7 years. After the first 7 years, he appeared before what I'll call the overseer of the monastery. And the overseer told him to say his two words. He said, "Bad food." After 7 more years of silence, he came before the overseer, and the overseer again told him to say his two words. He said, "Hard beds." After 7 more years passed, he once again appeared before the overseer, and he told him to say his two words, and he said, "Cold rooms." About a week later, he approached the overseer and said that he was leaving the monastery because he was tired of all the difficulties. The overseer of the monastery said, "Good. You haven't done anything but complain ever since you got here." Nobody likes a complainer. We should choose our words carefully. But it's not enough to learn what we should not say. It's not enough to learn how we should not use our words. We also need to learn how we should use our words. We need to understand the benefits of the proper use of words. We're told in Ephesians 4:15 to speak the truth in love. We are told to say things that benefit others, things that are helpful, things that edify, that strengthen, that build others up. Proverbs 18, verse 21, excuse me, says that death and life are in the power of the tongue. People have lived lives filled with depression for lack of a kind word from others. People have committed suicide because of the harsh words of others. People have changed their lives and accomplished great things because of one kind word of encouragement spoken by someone. Flatter me, and I may not believe you. Criticize me, and I may not listen to you. But encourage me, and I'll never forget you. I read this true story in Reader's Digest a few decades ago. And I remembered it when preparing for this lesson and found it on the internet. So that was very handy. You may be familiar with this, I'm not sure. Mary Ann Bird was born with multiple birth defects. She was deaf in one ear. She had a cleft palate, a disfigured face, a crooked nose, and lopsided feet. As a child, she dreaded other children staring at her and asking the embarrassing question, "What happened to your lip?" She would lie and say, "I cut it on a piece of glass." Each year, the children had their hearing tested at school. This was in 1950. The classroom teacher would call each child to the front desk, and then the teacher would whisper something simple, a simple phrase in the child's ear. A simple statement such as "the sky is blue" or "you have new shoes." This was the whisper test. If the child could repeat the phrase, they passed the test. To avoid humiliation, Mary Ann always cheated on the test. She would casually cup her hand over her one good ear so that she could hear what the teacher said. One year, Mary Ann's classroom teacher was Miss Leonard. Miss Leonard was one of the most loved and popular teachers in the school. She exuded gentleness and she loved the children deeply. And when it came Mary Ann's turn for the hearing test, she cupped her hand over her good ear as she'd done so many times before, and she strained to hear what Miss Leonard would whisper. Years later, Mary Ann wrote about this. She said, "I waited for those words that God must have put into her mouth, those 7 words that changed my life." Miss Leonard did not say the sky is blue or you have new shoes. Miss Leonard whispered, "I wish you were my little girl." Those 7 beautiful, positive, powerful words became a watershed moment in Mary Ann Bird's life. In one sense, nothing really changed for Mary Ann Bird. She remained disfigured and deaf in one ear, and she continued to be the object of the classmates' painful ridicule. But everything changed for Mary Ann Bird. She began to see that her classmates' judgments were neither the only words about her, nor were they the final words about her. She started to understand herself as loved and lovable, and she dared to envision a future not constrained by her circumstances, but a future that could transcend them. Following in the footsteps of the teacher who set her free, Mary Ann Bird herself became an acclaimed teacher known for her compassion and her kindness. Proverbs 25:11 says, "A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver." Mark Twain once said, "I can live 2 months on a good compliment." Really makes a difference what we say. The words that come out of our mouths can encourage and edify, and the words that come out of our mouths can damage and destroy. Do we lift people up? And I'm not talking about empty praise. Do we make them glad they were around us? Do we help them see the good in themselves? Do we help them see that they are precious in God's eyes? Do we make them better for having been around us? I recently watched a TED Talk on YouTube called "The Transformative Power of Classical Music" by Benjamin Zander. At the conclusion of his talk, Mr. Zander told a story about a woman he once met who had survived Auschwitz. Of course, Auschwitz was one of the most well-known Nazi concentration camps in World War II. The lady told him this story. She said she was taken to Auschwitz when she was 15 years old. Her parents were lost to her. She never saw them again. But her 8-year-old brother was on the train with her to the concentration camp. She said that she and her brother were in the boxcar together, and she looked down and saw that her brother's shoes were missing. She was immediately upset, and she said, "Why are you so stupid? Why can't you keep your things together, for goodness sake?" Moments later, the train arrived at Auschwitz, and she never saw her brother again. He didn't survive the camp. Those were the last words she said to him. And so when she came out of Auschwitz, she made a vow. She said, "I walked out of Auschwitz into life, and I made a vow, and the vow was, I will never again say anything that couldn't stand as the last thing I ever say to someone." The words we say can go a long way in benefiting others. They can go a long way in damaging others. As we live our lives with the aim to glorify God and to edify and help others, let us choose our words carefully.